or whoever's drawing their samples, and in the state institutions, they'd be by their medical staff, and then those bloods would be submitted to the crime laboratories for DNA analysis and profiling.
Let me ask you one last question.
Representative Park.
If I understand this, and I've studied a little bit, if they screw the sample up at the booking end, then you won't get a match. That's the only thing that can happen if it's screwed up. In other words, it's almost got a fail-safe in it.
That's correct. Chairman Miller, Representative Parks, if they switch samples at the, say, at booking, we got the wrong sample in, it would be just a wrong name in the computer. If we ever got a match, we'd simply be getting the blood from the wrong name, and then we would run it again for court purposes. Then it would be a no match, and it would show that the bloods that came in with John Doe's name on it was not actually John Doe's, it was somebody else's.
I think it's a great bill. I really do. And I don't say that very often, do I?
I've noticed that, Representative Park. Appreciate that comment. Major Dingaman, you have any other testimony?
Yes, Chairman Miller and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Major Roger Dingaman of the Oregon State Police Crime Laboratory Division. Our purpose today is to testify in support of House Bill 3444. Passage of this bill would require convicted sex offenders presently in the system and all future sex offenders to supply blood samples for DNA profiling. These profiles would be placed in a data bank for future reference in unsolved rape cases and other related sexual crimes. At least 11 other states have already implemented this program, while most other states are in the planning stages. Once these data banks are operational nationwide, each state would have the ability to cross-check each other's files. Presently, the FBI is coordinating this effort on a nationwide basis. It is well established that sex offenders are repetitive in their offenses and become progressively more violent in time. Although this bill does have a significant fiscal impact, if implemented, the forensic information obtained may result in a cost savings to the citizens of this state. The cost of providing the analytical information may be offset by the decrease in investigative and prosecutorial time. The results are so definitive that a large number of offenders are expected to plead to their offenses, saving valuable court time and dollars. It is important to realize that the analytical findings of DNA profiling not only establishes the identity of the offender, but it will also clear an innocent suspect. More importantly, passage of this bill to allow DNA profiling will save many of the citizens we serve from the traumatic and tragic personal attacks on them by repeat offenders. For these primary reasons, I respectfully request your support for this important bill. This concludes my testimony. If there's any questions, I'd be pleased to answer them at this time.
Thank you very much, Major. Questions? Let me, before we proceed, and it's appropriate, Mr. Pearson just walked in. Because of the requirement of a certain number of members in order to enter work sessions, and because certain members have gone to other parts of the state, it is unlikely we will be able to have sufficient number in order to do business in a work session. So to those who are here on 2140,
yes.
House Bill 2140, let me apologize that we just aren't going to be able to get into a work session on it today because of lack of numbers, and let me also reissue an apology for our late restart here. I'm very sorry for the inconvenience we caused to all of you witnesses. But we will reschedule it, and I will be mindful of the inconvenience I caused you today and do my level best to get you right up at the top of the charts next time we have you scheduled. I apologize.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. I left my testimony there. It's passed on to the committee, and we'll get a flying start on the next one.
Thank you very much. Please proceed, Russ.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Russ Spencer, wearing several hats today, Oregon State Sheriff's Association, also the Oregon Law Enforcement Legislative Committee, the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police. First of all, I'd like to say that we accept your apology, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me?
I just want to let you know we accept your apology.
Oh, thank you.
In order to expedite things here, I'm testifying on behalf of Sheriff Lee Vasquez of Yamhill County, who was here earlier and was unable to stay. And in order to avoid a lot of duplication, let me just tell you that we adamantly support this bill. We think it's probably one of the most revolutionary techniques to come into law enforcement in this century, and we think the possibilities for it are limitless in terms of being able to resolve pending cases. The most important point I think that Sheriff Vasquez wanted to make was that the application of this technology will be used in the investigations of major violent crimes against persons, such as murder, rape, sodomy, and other sex offenses. We've appeared before this committee numerous times this session in regards to sex crime legislation. By now, you're familiar with the frustration that our people feel in the investigation and prosecution of these types of cases. And I think it would be very easy for you to envision their enthusiasm for any type of a tool that would help them to increase the solve rate on these types of crimes. I can tell you that in the law enforcement community, we are rarely unanimously, fervently in support of an issue. And in this case, we are. I know of no contingent of the law enforcement community that does not support this issue. We strongly urge you to pass this bill and help us to put these predators away. I would be delighted to answer any questions that I am capable of answering. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spencer. That hasn't been fervent, vigorous support on a number of things you've brought before me, I guess.
We have no small bills, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Shepherd, you care to come up and endorse this policy? Now, you were asked earlier to comment on a bill, and you denied the opportunity.
I'm Ross Shepherd. I represent the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. And actually, I find the technology, this DNA technology, to be fascinating. My concern, however, is with Section 13, the last section, that states that the DNA analysis is admissible as evidence to prove or disprove the identity of a person. There is, both in the scientific and legal community, a very real controversy in this state and throughout the nation over the use of DNA testing in court procedures. You've heard some testimony about a few of the criminal cases in the state where the prosecution has sought to use DNA. I will tell you that in every one of those cases within the state of Oregon and in every case that I've read about throughout the country where the prosecution has sought to use DNA, there is extensive pretrial litigation over the admissibility of that evidence, with the court having to make the determination over the process and procedure that was employed by the police, by the experts, in coming to a determination. So I will tell you that since there is no consensus within the legal community or within the scientific community about how this testing should be done and the methods that are used in the testing and then what the results actually mean, that you should not, by legislative fiat, just say that this controversy does not exist. This needs to be a case-by-case determination with the court hearing the evidence about each individual testing and the court then making a determination of the admissibility before a jury hears that there was a test done. So my primary concern is certainly the last section. I don't think there is a like section anywhere else to be found in the United States.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. Questions?
Thank you.
You might just stay there for a second, if you will. Mr. Wassman, do you have any comment about the concerns on Section 13?
First of all, Mr. Chair, I'm aware of at least four states, perhaps six, that have, by a legislative fiat, declared this to be admissible evidence. This provision would not foreclose defense attorneys from making the case in the individual case that the test was improperly done, that the results in the particular case are unreliable. This would simply declare that the technology itself is a reliable scientific technique when done according to acceptable procedures and protocols. So the argument that is currently being made in trial courts that the particular test may not have been done properly will not be foreclosed by this provision, but this would foreclose the argument that DNA analysis of genetic material is not capable of reliably producing a result. And that is the very expensive argument being made in the trial courts currently, and that would be foreclosed by this provision.
Thank you. Mr. Shepard?
I don't think that's what Section 13 says. I think it says that if there was a test, it is admissible, the jury will hear it, and then it's left to the defense to try and discredit it, and it goes to the weight rather than the actual admissibility.
Representative Bauman. Mr. Chair, Representative Bauman, yes, it is. Yes, it is. That is the point, that there really is no debate in the scientific community about whether DNA analysis can produce a reliable and powerful result. The debate really exists as to whether, in a particular case, protocols that are acceptable were followed, whether the sample was preserved adequately and that kind of thing, and that should be the debate in the individual criminal case, and this would tip the balance in, I think, the way you've described.
Apparently, there is Representative Mannix left me this material. Pardon me?
It's fascinating.
It's pretty fascinating. Yeah, it is. The recommendation that Representative Mannix received from a person in Eagle Point was to make some amendments, and I just want to talk to both of you about it, to delete the words "the" and "person" in line 25 on page 2. To delete the language in line 42 of page 2, the purpose of establishing the identity of a person, to delete the word "human" in line 11 on page 6, and on line 12, page 6, the words that refer to of a person, to allow the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, National Forensic Laboratory in Ashland, Oregon, to transfer the new technology to the Oregon State Police Game Division for use in enforcement and prosecution of wildlife crimes, as well as in crimes against persons. Just thought I would run that by the witnesses.
The example is very good in there.
What is the example in there? Council has read this.
You can read quicker than
the example. Probably during our last break.
Was this it, the bald eagle example?
Yes, the bald eagle example. I thought it was a very good one. The scenario in which a farmer kills a bald eagle because it was killing his chickens, the investigation produces the farmer's overall with bloods on them. They match the blood to the carcass of the eagle and can then identify the eagle, the farmer as the perpetrator.
That sounds,
the
it's a good idea.
Inside the blood, bald eagle's stomach match the chicken blood.
I think the technology would allow that.
Technology is capable of doing that now, and those changes would be perfectly acceptable to the Department of Justice.
It'd be acceptable to me, too.
And you don't have any objection to that use?
No. The technology is fascinating, and we are getting there. We're getting there to have this be a thoroughly reliable test, but my testimony is we're not there yet. There have been at least one case in the state of Oregon where the judge did not allow the DNA evidence after thorough pretrial litigation.
Based upon its reputation in the scientific community?
Based upon his ruling that it was too confusing to present to a jury. He made no ruling about whether or not it would meet the test of scientific admissibility in the state as set forth.
I hate to be a juror on some of these securities fraud cases, speaking of confusing evidence, but what be that as it
That was a Washington County trial court. Washington County trial court has since admitted DNA evidence in a prosecution, I believe, of a rape case.
And I think that person was acquitted. That defendant was acquitted. Is that right?
I was present at both of those cases as an expert witness. Chairman, no.
You want to come up and identify yourself? Yeah.
For the record, I'm Karen Rodlin, and I'm an assistant professor at Oregon Health Sciences University. And I'm a molecular geneticist, and I have served as an expert witness in pretrial or trial phase of four cases in the state of Oregon involving DNA evidence. And in particular, in those two Washington County cases which have been referred to, I was an expert witness in the pretrial phase of both of them, in the trial phase of the Herzog case. The first case, the ruling is exactly as Mr. Wassman described. The judge ruled that the DNA typing evidence was inadmissible because, in his own words, he was confused by the evidence, and therefore he presumed that the jury would be confused as well. And under the Oregon relevancy statute, that evidence had to be helpful to the jury. It was therefore excusable. The second case, the Herzog case, was a multiple rape case in which trial the DNA evidence not only linked the suspect to a single rape, but indicated that four different rapes had been performed by the same male suspect. Two of those were actually being adjudicated in the court when I gave testimony, and the individual was found guilty of those two. So that refers to those specific cases. In terms of the perception in the scientific community of this technology, there is a consensus among non-forensic academic molecular biologists that this technique is very valid and very powerful and very reliable. There is discussion of precisely what is the best manifestation of this technology in a forensic setting, and there have been at least three bodies of nationally recognized scientists and technologists who have had formal hearings on the subject of DNA evidence. There was a Banbury conference at Cold Spring Harbor. The Office of Technology Assessment had a series of expert witnesses, and the National Academy of Sciences is currently investigating the whole field of DNA typing. I don't know what the status of the National Academy of Science investigation is, but the Banbury conference and the OTA assessment of DNA typing have both come out with the bottom line that DNA typing is valid and reliable and reproducible.
May I ask one other question? Can you explain exactly what you mean about the forensic presentation? When you say that there is some question about the presentation, are we talking about whether the manner in which the results that you observe in the laboratory are presented to a jury of lay people? Is that?
Primarily, the questions that have arisen have to deal basically with statistical interpretation of the data, what that means, and whether that's overwhelming to a jury, and how best to present that to a jury so that the jury can comprehend it and still have room for interpretation of the results. Okay. The second question that has arisen is simply that there are some differences in the DNA samples that you handle in the laboratory versus those that you see in a forensic sample, and the molecular biology community has had to learn about the forensic community and what the limitations are of dealing with that sample. And all of those questions actually have been addressed by those conferences I've talked about, and specific procedures for standardizing things so that every lab does it the same way have either been recommended by those bodies or they're in the process of being formulated.
I would just comment, Mr. Chair, if I could. That is very interesting, because I think your testimony really brings to the front the only reason at this point that I can think of for keeping this process in the court. And let me explain why that is. And I know that's not your intention, but I think that when you have a technology that is so, excuse the term, magical, really, that can really look in so closely and identify people so uniquely and is so distanced from, you know, our common experience in the manner that you need to explain it to a jury, I think that the questions of presentation and standardization and really the translation of the way you think and work and operate in your laboratory and what that information that you receive statistically, or I guess I missed the part about how you receive the information, but that translation is kind of it. The jury is going to be very impressed by the technology and very impressed and persuaded by your conclusions from, you know, the technology. And I guess my concern is that before we draw the bright line here statutorily, it would be helpful to have some experience or some additional experience. Now, it sounds to me as if experience has really opened the door for this, and it's experience that has brought us to where we are now. It also sounds to me that the standardization and the translation and, you know, the problem of the forensic presentation are issues that are being dealt with on a case-by-case basis as they arise.
May I respond?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
I want to make two points, and one is that the primary point that I want to make is it has often been...
Speak into the mic just a little more. Thank you very much.
One of the prime points that I want to make is it has been consistently stated occasionally in print and in this type of hearing that there is no consensus among the scientific community about DNA testing. And I want to simply state that there is quite a great deal of consensus among the scientific community about the validity of the test and its applicability to forensic settings. Where that comes into the legal process, and obviously I'm not a lawyer, but DNA evidence is being challenged as a technology at the pretrial level and on a test-by-test basis at the trial level. And the consensus is that among the scientists that as a technology, this type of pretrial testing of the technology of the same points over and over and over again about the technology has gone on for a number of years now. There is consensus among the scientific community and that the technology itself deserves acceptance. There is still definitely room, and no one would try to shortchange the process of examining each test that was performed at the trial level on a test-by-test basis to see how it met with the generally accepted standards for doing that test. So I want to make sure that that came clear. That's what I intended to say.
Questions? Representative Bowman?
Well, you know, the issue of statistics always kind of intrigues me. And it sounds like there is still some issue about the presentation of this. Is it the statistical occurrence of a variety of indicators in the DNA?
It's what's specifically being questioned is how meaningful is it to say that the odds of a statistical match, the odds of a chance match between the suspect's blood and the semen sample are 1 in 1 million versus 1 in 50 million versus 1 in 1,000. Okay? That is the particular issue that's being debated is... And some feel that by coming up with a figure of 1 in 50 million, even though there might be it might be a mathematically valid number, 1 in 50 million, some people feel that that is just such an overwhelming number that juries can't deal with it, and they tend to then think it has to have been the identification. And that, I think, is a question of the weight of the evidence, not the admissibility. The statistics really only go to the weight of DNA testing in the best or worst scenario.
Well, if I could, Mr. Chair, just the statistic that you're using then is the comparison between, it's an occurrence. It's a rate of occurrence of whatever factor you're identifying.
Yes.
Okay. I guess my question was, does statistical analysis have anything to do with the identification itself? So that when you look for the fingerprint or whatever it is, we'll just call it a fingerprint, are you looking for something that occurs over a number of...
There are two distinct events. There are objective criteria for a match, and they have to be met, okay? And that is one thing. And then there's another set of criteria for saying, once you have determined that these are a match, okay, what is the probability that it came from John Doe, who is on the witness stand, versus that it may have come from some other Caucasian male who may have produced that sperm? And that is where the statistics come in. It's totally independent of declaring a match, which is an objective criteria based upon measurement of migration on a gel with a ruler, essentially.
Scientific community pretty agreed about the indicia for a match?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wassman?
No further points. I couldn't have said it any better.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Shepard?
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 3444? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3444. Council, any other bills you'd like to take up today? Representative Bauman, closing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, we are adjourned.